The technology will always change, but the principle is the same of how people's brains work, and they're always absorbing, and because they're always absorbing, the more sensory assets you have, word, shape, color, your brand mark, your tagline, your jingle, your photography style, like the picture back in the day of iPods. Remember those came out and the people were dancing, and it was like black and white silhouette and pink and green and yellow, and you're like, that's the coolest ad ever. Well, it was memorable. And so then we get into mechanics of how to deliver campaigns, and that's a different subject, but
Welcome to the Business Ownership Podcast, brought to you by Awareness Strategies, helping you navigate the waters between entrepreneurship and ownership.
Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Medlock, and I'm super glad that you're here with us today because I am here with my most amazing guest, Stephen. Stephen, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Michelle. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in today. It's a pleasure to be with both of you and all of you.
So give us a highlight of who you are and what you do for business.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, my name is Stephen Fry, and I am the principal and chief brand scientist at Quantum Branding. And so if you're not familiar in the marketing world, there's typically marketing agencies who help you sell your stuff or spread your word through social media, website, other that form of. Then there's advertising, where people you want to pay to send your message. And then there's branding. And I sit in the middle and I help craft the distinctive brand assets that represent entrepreneurs, organizations, coaches, consultants, authors, brands, people with something that they want to share in the marketplace. And we actually use evidence-based principles based on science. There's actually a science of how we think, how we create experiences, and how we communicate. And we use all those sciences to make sure that your brand identity works for you and helps you grow and scale your business.
Nice. I love it. And we will totally get into all of that to some extent. Don't we talk for days about it, but to some extent, we will get into that. First, let's back up the bus bit. How did you get into branding and how did that become your thing?
Oh, absolutely. So when I first moved to Nashville, I took a job in an agency, and I was on the account side. And I was one of those kids that your parents are always like, don't do art or music. And then I moved to Nashville and I work in art, basically glorified art. And so I found a book, and it was called Designing Brand Identity. And it's by Alina Wheeler, and became kind of like the starting point, the launch pad. It was like I had found a special manifesto or something, like on a journey that was buried. It was not buried, it was in a bookstore, but it's like I'm an explorer like Lewis and Clark, and I'm hiking the Appalachian Trail, and I find this book, and it reveals the world of branding to me. But here's the interesting thing: it talked a lot about the processes and how we do it. So this is a brand mark, this is a and when you need to do a competitive audit. But then I was like, Alina, why does this work? And so it's like she wrote half of the one side of the coin for me, and it opened up this world for me to explore and discover and diagnose the different sciences involved in marketing science. Marketing science is about marketing, and then there's branding science, which is about branding. And they're both related, like squares and rectangles. One is one, but one's not the other. So that really was the impetus. And since 2004, I had just been on a journey of working at different agencies, but always exploring that. And then in 2009, I went on my own, launched my own agency after the agency I was at shut down due to the economy at the time, and started my own agency that was focused on the science of how branding works and creating brand identities to help and brand assets for businesses to grow and scale. So finding that book and following it through all its editions and then using that as a launch pad was really kind of the trajectory for me.
This is a fascinating subject for me. I've always been fascinated with the human mind and how it works. And to simplify the concept for listeners, somebody once asked me, do you, the colors in your brand matter? I mean, that is just so tip of the iceberg. But let me ask you this. If you see somebody walking down the street, and they're walking towards you and they're wearing a bright neon pink shirt. Do you have an impression of them? Oh, well, yeah. And I said, okay. So 5 minutes later, you see some dude walking down the street and he's got total camouflage head to toe. Do you have an opinion of what's going on? Well, yeah, totally. I said, so would it matter if your logo was hot pink or if it was camouflage? And it's like, oh, okay. Now let's get delve into the science of this, because most people get that. It's like, yeah, we judge a book by its cover. We're always going to do that. And everybody is judging your brand by a whole ton of things in a ton of different ways. So delve in wherever you want to start, because this is,
yeah,
me, this is a great one. Pandora's box.
So there's a couple things going on in your example. When we're seeing people on the street, we're seeing people we're seeing people represent their interests themselves, but what they're also doing is they're also signaling. This is a really, really interesting term, kind of like in the wild, there's different animals with patterns, and you know, I went to peacocks immediately, and those birds that do the funny dances. But it reminds me of William Shakespeare's pastoral comedy, As You Like It. And all the world's a stage is one of the things he says. I think RuPaul says all the world's a drag. We're all basically doing drag or costuming.
Right.
We're signaling to people. We're saying, this is who we are. This is what we do. This is why we matter. But here's the interesting thing. The pink shirt example is really good when we're talking about personal style, but mm-hmm. then when we get to a category or for a product or a service, here's the interesting thing: hot pink on the street doesn't mean hot pink in the aisles. Kind of like how people think yellow means happy, yellow doesn't mean happy in the dental category. It means stained teeth. You know, green may mean grass in, you know, the landscaping category, but in the pool category, green means algae. And so what we find is this is a really good primer to introduce us to the idea of cultural contextualization and category contextualization. So every category has its own norms. So if someone's like, oh yeah, I picked blue. So sometimes you actually may want to follow a category norm and then tweak it a little bit. Because most of the time, the colors and the imagery are all near knockoffs of each other. If you go to buy some toilet paper, and many of us tried to during COVID, and you would see that there's basically, it's a wide package, a tall package, and there's either red, blue, or yellow. There's a soft, fuzzy animal or baby. There's a swooshy pattern and bad math in the corner. I still don't understand how to do the math. I think everyone makes up their own system.
Is bad math part of that?
Bad math is kind of a category trade dress there. It really is.
If you can't do this math, then you definitely have to buy a product.
I'm just like, how many rolls are in there and will they fit in whatever container dispenser exactly. I have? So, but that's a really good example. I mean, if you go to, and I use these examples like tissue paper or even cookies. Cookies is a great example. If you go to the cookie aisle, do you have a favorite cookie? Like if you're going to go to the store and buy a cookie, everyone usually says Oreo. And I'm like, really? Some people, and then I had one person I did a show with, and they're like, Hydrox. Hydrox is better than Oreo. Oreo is trash. And I was like, wow, very opinionated. I love it. So if you go to the cookie category, here's a really great example. And I'll give you the ping pong back here in a second. If you want to buy cookies, if you say you wanted to even be a cookie, that'd be a better example. If you wanted to be a cookie, you would be in a tray, in a thing with parchment cups like Pepperidge Farms. You would maybe be shrink wrapped together, but you wouldn't be in a container that's clear with a sticker on top, because that's the bakery. That's a different category. And if you're too different, if your company, and I use this because these are kind of universal stories we all understand. If your company wants to be in the cookie category, you can't be too different. You'll be a cake, you'll be pie, you'll be crackers, you'll be chips. You won't be a cookie. So you have to retain the qualities. It's like baseball. We're mixing our metaphors. But to get to first base, like you need to be what the customer's looking for. But then third base is what the industry does. And so, you know, you need to have chocolatey, crispy, chewy, butterscotchy, the flavors and things that people are looking for. Sometimes they're looking for gluten-free. Sometimes they're looking for soft. Those are just cues. Those don't make you special Like sometimes we focus on our like USPs and we're like, we're the number one, you know, butterscotchy cookie made with hand rolled oats. Like all people really care about is like, oh, is this an oatmeal cookie? Oh, it's a butterscotch oatmeal cookie. Like they're not thinking it. They're like, is this what I'm looking for? Yes or no? I want to get to first base. And then third base is like, does this look like a cookie? Is it packaged like a cookie? Does it pass the USDA inspection? Is it packaged properly? Can it be? So there's this, we have this ball diamond, and then wherever we want to hit the ball, if we want a home run, this is where people's IP comes into play, and we can mimic someone, or we can be distinct in that category. We don't want to be different, so we want to be distinct. So the challenge is, how do you be distinct in your category so that people can notice you? And actually, that's where the science of branding starts, is it's all about memories, because the more memories you have, the more associations you have, the more top of mind you are. And if you're top of mind, when people go to the store, they're actually on autopilot. And when they're on autopilot, they'll remember you. So if they're going to remember you, but I want their business with my cookies, I have to distract them. So I have to be able to distract them enough to distract them from grabbing your cookies, so they grab my cookies instead. So it's an attention game along with memories game. So it's kind of like the movie Inception meets Total Recall meets, I don't know, like the little whack-a-mole at, you know, that's not a movie, but like it's like you have to get someone's attention, and then it's like Total Recall and Inception the rest of the time. So that's kind of just some thoughts on, you know, you talked about the pink and the camo, and that's why I thought it would be a really good spot to take it for our listeners today.
And I appreciate that. And is there a distinction for you between products? Because obviously walking into a grocery store or warehouses of stores that we have now, or to go online for something, or to go for a service in something. So I guess that's kind of three different categories. Do you see a distinction in those and more, or what do you see?
That's a really great question. And a lot of the feedback I give is like, hey, you know, when you're talking about brand science, I hear that you've worked with Mars Petcare and Target and Walmart and Michaels and these other product-based companies. That's kind of like where we can see it in its fullest. It's the examples that we all know because we've all worked or gone in retail or been in a retail environment. We've bought a product before. So there's a little bit more like context for us to talk about. What's interesting is that our minds are the same. Our minds are all the same.
Our
And
minds work the same whether we're online or in the mall.
what's interesting is so there's a course I teach to marketers and brand leaders called Brandpreneur, and it's 10 weeks. And one of the things that we do as they're working on their brand plan is one of the things we stop and we talk about the brain, and we say, what are some of the myths of the brain? And some of the myths are that our brains, there is no such thing as left brain, right brain, creative, logical. Or we use 10% of our brain, or men's brains are different than women's brains. You know, there's a lot of myths that we have that we propel around, just like anecdotal stories. It's kind of like the early bird gets the worm. Like we say these things, and you're like, actually, that refers to like a very specific event that happened with one bird, but that doesn't mean you can universally apply it to your business. You know, with the examples that I just shared about toilet paper and cookies, those are just good examples of how our brain works. And at the end of the day, top of mindness works across all categories. So for people to choose you, we do have to understand part about the brain. And the easiest way to describe it is that you basically have two kind of operating systems. One is called system one, and it's basically your autopilot. It's always on. It's making note of things. It's making sense with your senses of the world around you. It's like, oh, stop sign, sequence of cognition. It's processing information. And this is always going. It's why you can talk on the phone while you're driving, and you can talk on the phone and listen and pay attention because you've learned these tasks. There's muscle memory. System two is like, hey, Michelle, what's 12 times 37? And you're like, oh, hold on.
Not a
Stop.
clue.
Michelle, should I buy this house and that's, you know, 292,000 and put 20% down to avoid PMI? Like you're like, stop. It uses up all your resources. That system two is when the fan in the computer is spinning really fast and you're like, oh my gosh, my computer's going to burn out. That's system two.
When you're talking to somebody and you can hear their fan going. Exactly.
My fan is always going. That's my life. So what that is a good example of is we're on autopilot, and during the day we are making sense and creating memories in the world around us. So when we're exposed to different sensory assets consistently, words, shapes, brand marks, colors, products, taglines, jingles, sound, music, characters. You know, if I said, oh man, I'm really, really hungry, Michelle. And you're like, you're not you when you're hungry. I know, I heard the fan running, and we get a good laugh out of it. And then it triggers, it makes you think of the product, makes you think of Snickers. Here's the interesting thing. Hunger is like a universal human thing. So like kudos or Snickers, kudos is another brand. I guess we shouldn't use those. You know, kudos to them or Snickers to them for coming up with a human, like, you're not you when you're not sleeping. I don't know. Like somebody else needs to create a universal human thing. But why? Because everyone knows what hunger is. So if I'm going to create a snack bar, I'm not going to use hunger as the trigger. Why? Because someone has that association, that mental association. So really it is about creating that top of mindness. And the way our mind works, we're on autopilot. And so the autopilot literally is just going to the grocery store and it's buying things that it's used to buying. And I'm going to have to disrupt that emotional person and kind of become part of their world. The term is salience. It's just like embedded in them. They know it. And it's the same with all of our products, our services, our categories, digital, online. The means that we communicate that changes. You know, we used to do, you know, before we used to do, you know, manuscripts and hear ye, and that's how people found out about stuff. And, you know, and then there was guys on ponies and they delivered mail, and then we got print, and then we had radio, and then we had television. So the technology is always going to change. There's probably going to be some kind of like new form of like VR display marketing, who knows, some, you know, it's like in those bubble cars they've been, you know, promising us since I was in kindergarten. But the technology will always change, but the principle is the same of how people's brains work, and they're always absorbing. And because they're always absorbing, the more sensory assets you have, word, shape, color, you know, your brand mark, your tagline, your jingle, your photography style, you know, like the picture, back in the day of iPods, remember those came out and the people were dancing and it was like black and white silhouette and pink and green and yellow. And you're like, that's the coolest ad ever. Well, it was memorable. And so then we get into mechanics of how to deliver campaigns. And that's a different subject, but within brand science. But the idea is that it has to be memorable and they can recall it. And as we build those clusters of memories, the bigger the clusters of memories, the more you're going to think of people. So if there's a 4-lane highway, connected all the way to Michelle's brand with awareness strategies, we're going to think of Michelle first before, you know, we think of Mr. Orangebird, because he just has one. He's a character. He doesn't have a brand mark. He's the only thing at his strategy firm. That's the only thing. So if the more memories you have, the more clumps of your brain, it's called nodes, form together. And so your brain goes, oh yeah, I remember that. Because your brain is actually trying to conserve energy. Mm-hmm. And so your brain wants to just get rid of the stuff it doesn't need to remember. So it's going to get rid of the stuff it deems not important. So the stuff that has the most nodes or the most memories, it's, oh, this must be important. I remember meeting Michelle. She had those fun glasses on and the great hair. And I remember her, yeah, at that event. And then, oh, she's got the podcast. So the more memories I have, I'm going to remember things. And so we call that top of mindness. And so that's really the big principle of how differentiation or distinction is the real world word of the pink and the camo. That's really how this all comes together, is in our memories, we remember, in the person or business or product or brand we have the most memories of is the one we think of first. And so that person or brand has the most opportunity to grow and scale their business more than everything else. And that's what Fortune 500 companies do every day, and they kind of don't want us to know about it.
So when it comes to putting out our messaging, a lot of people are, I think, making the mistake of putting out their print ads look one way, their website looks another way, their products look another way. And to me, there's no visual association between them. And they'll try to do things that differentiate them kind of technically. So their website will have their login in a different spot there. And I'm like, you want your, at this point in time, you want your logo on the left. You want your first button to be the products you sell. You want your login to be on the right hand. You want to make it as easy for people to spend money with you as possible, and then differentiate yourself in different ways. But feel free to take that wherever you want. What is the biggest mistake you see businesses making when it comes to the brands? Let's go with that.
Well, first off, it sounds like you have experience with brand science. You sound like you're a resident brand scientist, because you just shared one of the 7 rules for brand growth, which is be consistent. Because if we keep things fresh to ensure top of mindness, but stay consistent in our assets and the use of them, people remember that. If we switch it up, it's literally like you're on your way to work and you're on autopilot, and then all of a sudden there's a detour. Your brain's like, whoa, detour. Whoa, I was not ready. This is inappropriate. Tell the mayor. So that's what your brain does. It likes the consistency. And here's the interesting thing is we want to be consistent, but we can't get stale. It's like when somebody comes and cleans your house, they literally come and they put the stuff back, but they clean it and they put it back and they zhuzh it. And it feels alive again for some magic reason. And that's the same thing with your brand assets. We want to keep them fresh. We want to keep them alive and vibrant. And that actually goes right into what you said. What is the biggest mistake? And if I could share one of the biggest kind of like takes the legs out right from you and your business is approaching and thinking of your brand's visual assets, all the stuff that's in your brand identity. I say distinctive brand assets. You may say, potato, potato. You may say brand identity. if you think that that's a one and done thing, you are missing out on a really big opportunity, because here's why. Branding is actually not something you just do strategically at the beginning. It is. It absolutely is. And it's something you are committed to and explore and revisit quarterly, connected to your business goals as you're working on, the stages of growth in your business, the age and the phase, and the stages and the metrics of your business that you're wanting to achieve. And here's a good example. So for us to remember something, we need more memories, right? Well, the average business has like 3 to 5 landmark, color, maybe a tagline. That's about it. For example, Coca-Cola has over 150 and counting. And then what do they do? Oh, it's summertime. Here's the summer jam series. Oh, it's fall time. Here's some footballs on the Man Coke. Coke Zero, I call it Man Coke. Here's Christmas time. So what is the archetype and the motivational content, content strategy for Coca-Cola Classic? It's the everyman in utopia. So it's appealing to everyone at all times, open happiness. Well, during Christmas, now we've got Santa and we've got polar bears. And that one year they introduced what? They introduced penguins. Every season, they are adding and zhuzhing their assets. Are they trying to own football, music, or Christmas? No, but they're trying to make associations with it, so you associate them with those things, those everyday activities. So when it comes to your brand, you may have your distinctive brand assets. And if you are focused on a certain, category in your niche, in your industry, you're going to want to use those assets, but then you're going to want to keep them vibrant, and you may want to add some. If you only have 3 to 5, it's going to be really hard to be memorable in people's brains. So you're going to want to really work on adding a few until you get to that 30 to 35 mark. And that's actually where the number starts to actually make a difference, is the 30 to 35 mark. And here's a great example. So for color, you may have your single color that your brand is, but then maybe you have an accent color. So it's pink, but then it's pink and green. Oh, it's pink and camo. And then that's part of your brand. And then you also have the colorized use of your mark, That's three right there. So then that helps us start counting. So then you have your tagline, and then you have your typefaces or your fonts. And so then if you have two or three of those that are very distinct to you and you've done your research and you're like, no one else is using them. And because you've got that vibrant vibe, maybe one looks like a handwritten Sharpie marker. Okay, Permanent Marker Pro. So then you start adding these. And so each category can have three to five. And then it starts adding up and then you're creating momentum. So the big mistake is that we think we're one and done with branding and it's not something we look at. But when we look at a brand science approach to our brand and our brand assets, we definitely want to come back and look at it quarterly and say, how can we use or lose some of these assets? That are they just not memorable? Are they not distinctive? And there's a whole process for that. But the goal is to make them highly distinctive. So like, yes, that screams just you. And then you want to make them famous. We can work on the famous bit, but if it's not distinctive and it's bland, it's like nobody wants generic cookies in a brown paper bag that just says cookies. Like, no, you want to see the milk splashing out and you want to see like it's made by, you know, pink punk rock camo girls on the front. And they're like, this is our cookie. I'm like, I would do this. I just make up a brand on the fly.
Right.
So it's like, awesome. You know,
just go and talk to Steven.
They're liberal. And they're liberal.
Go,
they're
hey, I got this idea.
Agenda.
Run.
They're very liberal ideas that cookies for all. I don't know. Everyone should have cookies and be their own flavor. It's a flavor for everyone. Liberal cookie agenda. So the idea is that the more we use those assets, the more we create the connection to the memories. And so that's our goal. And looking quarterly, what is the goal you want to do? Oh, you want to take your, you know, pink punk rock camo cookies to a convention this year? So then all of a sudden you're going to create new assets, maybe to showcase the four new flavors at the convention and then your trade booth display. So this is how like some of the functional practical side of like, oh, I actually need to make the stuff. But then you're like, well, what is the message we need to say? So there starts to become a connection. And here's a secret. Brand strategy sounds like a really, really like, ooh, brand strategy. You know, there's like a wizard that you go pay money to in some back office and he looks in a crystal ball and he tells you your unique brand strategy. No, yeah, it can feel magical, but here's all it is. It's your design assets plus your business plan. Like what's your business? Like, what are your goals in this next quarter? Oh, we need to get traction in our industry, or, oh, we need to get, you know, we want to grow and we want to scale operations a little bit to deliver more cookies or services, whatever. That's what brand strategy is. Brand strategy is just how do we use the assets in the way that can help you accomplish your business goals. So that's actually a secret.
Or you just get
Steven
and some other creatives in the room. Because when you were talking about that, all I could think of was, oh, it's kind of like a video game. And as they get up to a different level, then they get to have access to the different kind of cookies. And so when you go to the computer gamer convention, and it's like, oh no, you got to get to a certain level before you can have those cookies. We got the whole system out there. It's like, this could totally rock, and we could do it in virtual reality. We could have like a metaverse. We could have totally. We could rock.
We're going to start a new podcast, and it's just going to be like, we're going to come up with ideas, and then whoever's on the phone or like listening on the phone, sound like a radio show now. Who's ever listening can be like, I'd like to buy that idea. I'll do that, and they'll just pay us money, and they'll come up with.
There you go.
I like it, but. But the goal is you know, to from whence the rabbit trail came, and the rabbit trails are always fun. The biggest thing is that you need to look at branding as not a one and done.
Absolutely. You're just giving me warm fuzzies, because usually when I'm talking to people and I go, okay, now that you have your assets, while you're talking to your graphic designer, because a lot of the smaller startup ones, they don't use the same graphic designs. They don't use the same team. They don't whatever at the beginning. I'm like, get a few assets, get it with a white background, get it with a black background, get it with a transparent background, have something in there that you can use it. Because going back to your Coca-Cola example, they could have daisies. It doesn't matter, but it's going to have the same look and feel. You're going to have the same cartoon look. You're going to have the same red, black, and white. You're going to have the same, when you look at it, you're going to go, yeah, that's Coke commercial. And if you don't have that in your business, when you go to your paper, your online, your everything, to your point, you're starting from scratch again. You're, each one of those ads becomes, your audience has to figure out who you are and what you're doing. So you're going to have those, what used to be 7 touches, I heard it was more like 40. You got to be on like 4 platforms. You got to touch
all. I heard it's 4,000, but no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like these days.
It's getting to be a little crazy. And if you're selling an actual product on the shelf, you just look at the mile long cookie aisle and go, okay, how do we stand out in this?
Sure.
Because, sure, you know, they're going to see that.
And this, that, you know, if I can, maybe we're going to call this episode, you know, myths, branding myths with Stephen and Michelle. That brings up another myth, though, that, you know, there's a science to this. And if you want to grow and scale your business, if you want to be, you know, the small town hero, now there is a place for that. There's a place if your footprint, your sales and your locale footprint just wants to stay local. Then there's a level of design that can meet that local level. And that's kind of like when you go to the restaurant and it's the greasy spoon kind of place, and they have the menu that slips in the thing and somebody printed them off, you know, in Microsoft DOS 10 years ago, you know. But that's, there's a certain level of design. But then if you need to grow and you want to grow regionally, you're going to have to contextually and culturally look at the IP and who you're competing. So that's how we do brand research, and that's how we diagnose and work with brands, is based on those factors. But here's the interesting thing. If you don't acknowledge that there's a science to that, you can't play in the big leagues.
Right.
And that's going to be holding you back. And so it may be cost effective for you in this moment. It may be cost effective for you in this moment to go to Fiverr, or go to graphicriver.com or freepick.com or some of these other, but here's
if you're starting,
if you're starting,
if you're going national, if don't do that.
But here's the thing. If you think that that's what is cost effective, here's the thing. Other people are going to download those too. And so yeah, people may see those assets in another category and it's going to confuse them. Mm-hmm. What if you had, you know, it's like, if we all shopped at the same stores, we're all going to look the same. But what if you had the magic of creating outfits for you that actually represented who you are, they fit you well, and they said the right thing to people? That's kind of like wearing an outfit for your brand, so that when you go to do business with people, you are triggering the right signals and the right prompts, so that when people look at you, and here's just a great example. I worked on a category, a product was,
Hold on. Because in a minute, I'm going to ask you about a Cinderella story of one of your clients that you work with. But before we do that, we are going to pause and take a break. 1 second.
Are you running a business over 7 figures but still struggling with technology headaches? Pay attention. You do not want to miss this offer. This podcast episode is brought to you by Awareness Strategies, who is offering a custom-built digital adoption roadmap for anyone running a business over 7 figures who's wanting to grow their business in the next 5 years. And it's not just a roadmap. They offer full implementation as well. If that scares the out of you, check out awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap for more details today. The link's in the show's notes. Don't regret not doing this. Do it now. That's awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap.
I am super excited to hear your story of Cinderella story of one of your clients. So go ahead.
Absolutely. So I've kind of got 2 of them that are tied. The first one was in a mattress manufacturer, and they had always made the fluff for everyone else. Sealy, Serta, Simmons, King Coil, they made all the fluff. And most people don't realize mattresses are kind of like sandwiches. They buy the ingredients from other delis. That's really the basic way to explain it. And so actually rebranded their parent organization. And because they worked in latex, they were called Latex International. And so that works if you're in that mattress world, because everyone knows, like, oh yeah, foam, rubber, Well, to the consumer, the word latex has a different connotation that's yes, medical or, you know, sexy time related. So, you know, so they're like, that doesn't drive. So rebranded them to Talalay Global. And Talalay is the name of the process. And we rebranded them. And then a year later, so this is kind of a 2-year process, rebranded their whole and created, they have a product line of mattresses that are like everywhere from $5,000 to $12,000. And in just 5 days, you know, just 5 days, made $9 million in commitments to retailers.
Nice.
And this was just, that was just commitments. That's not sales. That was just like, you know, so startup. That's what they agreed to purchase, you know? So yep. The sales of actually that were, are more, you know, but that, yeah. That moment of like, hey, we've been planning, we're at the Las Vegas market and we've had this beautiful new showroom and everything looks and feels so perfect. So when people come in, they're like, oh my gosh, we don't have this product. Nobody has this product. And so that was a really, really great example of they were the underdog. Like, how are they going to get on top? How are they, that's not a mattress. you know, how are they going to get, you know, their product in front of consumers? And so to go from nobody to somebody in that market. And at the time it was before Casper and, you know, Tuft & Needle and many of those had come on the scene. So the majority of people were still buying from retailers. And so that was just a really, really great, like, you know, for investing a small amount, you know, I think if we looked at it, it was less than like 2% of that to get $9 million back or so. It was just a great, great feeling. The mom and pop one was a father and daughter winery here in Nashville. And they came to me and said, hey, we have this great product. Is this going to make it in the market? And we did an audit and we looked at the things and it was the lower local design. It didn't have the chops. So we researched, you know, tea, wine, seltzer, and all those categories and came back with a product called Hard South, where the living is easy and the drinks are hard. And let me see if I can see it.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at this, and I don't know if you can, you know, it, and we got some shine on going with our lights, but when you look at this, it's got the gingham and it's got all these things that based on the research, these cue that nostalgic Southern feeling. And so when you look at this, your brain goes, oh yeah, I know blue means sweet and yellow means lemon and orange means peach.
Yep.
But you don't know why you know that, but you know that because of all the memories that have been built in there culturally and contextually. And so after working with them, got them with Lipman. They're the number one distributor here in Tennessee. So yay! They wouldn't have been able to, you know, leverage that if they didn't have that high level design. So that was kind of just two examples of, doesn't matter how big or small, Fortune 500 brand science is for everyone. And it helps people know that they've made the right choice. And they says, yes, you are legit. You know what you're doing. You are dressed for the right job. And so those are two kind of Cinderella stories that I love to share.
That is awesome. I love that because it denotes so well, like for Lipton to come and pick up them up, right? You know that they have to be of a certain caliber. And I think this is where a lot of people get confused is they think that they have a great idea and they're like, oh no, but I really love this idea. So I'm going to go and do this. You can do that. But odds are that if a branding expert looks at it and goes, it's not going to be marketable, that it's just a little too unique and a little too off the grid. And really, if you want a product to be sellable, you can't. I think that kind of summarizes the whole conversation here.
And it's hard because the businesses and the brands that we run are often the culmination of our passions and the things that were important to us. And then here's the interesting thing in the marketplace, that's not, it's like fuel versus diesel. It's water and oil. It's two separate things because meaningless distinction is what's noticed. The pink shirt or the camo in the clothes is what's noticed. You know, whatever the distinction factors are in your category. But here's the thing, everybody shares the majority of those same stories. And so in your category. So if you're a service professional, yeah, going going to the doctor or going to have someone come to your house, or like, those are the things that people know, and you can't deviate out of that because differentiation doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Meaningful, like the stories, like I love blue and I hate circles. Those things, like, it has to be what works for the consumer. It has to work for the client. It has to work for your customer.
So if somebody has a product or service that they think is a gem, they're going, I think this is rock star, but it's not selling the way I think it should, but I'm not getting the attention that I think it should. That would be a stumbling block that they may be having, that they're going, ah, Stephen, I need you so badly. What are some of the other stumbling blocks that they might be having that they know that you're the solution to their problems?
Yeah. So sometimes if you're kind of, there's a couple different kind of like triggers. One, if you're a son-in-law business, and I call that, you know, you've taken over, or you know, you're a heritage business, you've taken over, it's new people, new direction, but you've taken over the book of business. You know, often you may find that the direction you want to go is not the direction you were coming from. And so you want to go a new direction. You may want to pivot, as we all learned that word in COVID. I got to pivot. So if you want to go a new direction, maybe, the product that you're using no longer, the product you're creating is no longer your main product. So I think of like Kodak is a great example. If Kodak is all about film, they're not going to make it, but if they're all about preserving memories, they'll make it. Right. So, you know, keeping the innovation there and making sure conceptually people understand that your what your product or your promise is. What is the idea? Every brand needs a basket, mm-hmm. and that basket is an idea, and that it can carry all your stuff in. And if it doesn't fit that idea, then it's not going to make sense with your brand. Another one maybe.
It's okay. I know they self-identify. I know our listeners are going to want more from you. How did they start that journey with you?
Absolutely. So a couple of things you can do. The first thing you can do is go to the show notes, and you can get a thing called the Brand Science Checklist. And that is a free goodie for everyone that you can check out and help count. You're like, Stephen, I don't know how to count my brand assets. Well, you can do that with this, and it's free, and you can download it, and I will help you. And then if you want to know more, you can talk to me more. But it's a linktree.com/Stephen Fry. That's my link with all my goodies on it. But the checklist is bit.ly/brand science checklist. So you can go to the brand science checklist, download that, and get that free goodie to understand how do I start with this first. And that's the thing that you got to start with first, is counting how many assets you have. And once you know how many assets you have, there's a self-diagnostic, and it tells you at the bottom what to do next.
I love it. So we will, of course, have all of Stephen's links in the show notes. So go ahead and click his bit.ly and do it in a new browser, because we're not done yet. So I get to ask you, at what point in life did you know that you were a special kind of crazy enough to think that you could become an entrepreneur?
Ooh. Probably like in sixth grade, at least. I take this back. My favorite game to play as a child was Toy Store. And I had all my toys organized, and you could come to the toy store. So this room in the basement, we called it the toy store. In sixth grade, I sold, my uncle had grown Indian corn, and then he's like, I'm not going to do anything with it. Here, you can have it. I bundled it up in beautiful bundles by color, and then went to the flea market and sold it. And I think about that same time, I would sell like macrame hemp necklaces out of my locker, in like a big clear, like, you know, bedding bag that you get like a comforter in or sheet set in. I had like this clear bag, and I'd carry it around with me and peddle the macrame wares. But I was always hustling. I was always hustling and coming up with ways to do something that was fun and enjoyable and was a way to express creativity.
That is awesome. And you have been absolutely awesome. Any last words for our peeps?
Yeah, please check me out in the links, and we're currently taking accepting applicants for Brandpreneur. So that's a 10-week program helping purpose-driven brand leaders create actionable plans that propel you towards industry authority using brand science. And if you have a question, happy to talk shop and help you out in any ways that make sense. So click the link the link tree, and you can check out Brandpreneur. You can get the free brand science.
So Brandpreneur, a course to be able to understand how to structure your branding with branding psychology and sell your products better.
It's a way to install basically a new OS of how to think. How do we think about your brand so that you can get further faster, build traction with your marketing, make your marketing simple, make it easier for you if it's just you, or make it easier for your team if you have a team.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it immensely, and I know how valuable it is.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And thank you, listeners, for listening. It's been a pleasure to be with you all today.
Awesome. Peeps, this is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for being here with us today. Like you said, subscribe to the show, share with your friends. We love helping entrepreneurs grow.
Are you running a business over seven figures but still struggling with technology headaches? Pay attention. You do not want to miss this offer. This podcast episode is brought to you by Awareness Strategies, who is offering a custom-built digital adoption roadmap for anyone running a business over seven figures who's wanting to grow their business in the next 5 years. And it's not just a roadmap. They offer full implementation as well. If that scares the out of you, check out awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap for more details today. The link's in the show's notes. Don't regret not doing this. Do it now. That's awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap.